Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm practicing the wave.
That's right. The princess so that when we, wave.
That's yeah. not what you did. You did something
I
different.
I did the princess wave. I won't do that when we're on
royal,
video.
I was going to call it the royal.
The royal wave. Pretty close. Pretty close when we're on video. Just, you know, practicing, doing things in my head as we're talking. Leading Edge Medicine, 1-800-465-8770. We're talking with Warren about how much testosterone and how do you know?
And Linda, I do a lot of stuff in my head that would get me arrested if I did it in real life. So, you know.
I'm practicing cameras. Okay, it's now on Dr. Mixon.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Oh, boy.
So I have, through the decades, developed impulse control.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when my wife was being interviewed for her to come to America. And the interviewer actually asked my wife, in my presence, if she came to America to be a whore.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Did you come for prostitution? And
whoa.
I had a real urge to slap him right upside the head, but I decided it probably would not help her entry interview very well if I knocked
true.
The bastard off on his ass. So... impulse control.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do it in your head. Don't really
okay.
do it.
As long as you don't act on it,
you know?
The counselor says.
That's right.
Again,
that
another
right.
story for another yeah. time.
What will the psychologist say?
Yes. As long as you don't
you
act on
the
it.
Woman I love, I want her to beat you to a pulp.
That's
two
right.
extra
right.
treatment sessions
protect
needed.
Protect my woman. But anyway.
Okay, Warren. I think that day Dr. Mixon had a little too much testosterone.
No,
or not enough.
If I had too much, I would have.
Oh, you would have,
his ass.
Yes.
So, no.
So, how do you control the amounts exactly?
Okay. Here's the thing. Human beings are not machines. You do not make, when you were 18 years old, you did not make the same amount of testosterone any 2 days in a row. Hmm. You did not make it any 2 mornings and afternoons in a row. We are creatures of variability, and our levels go up and down and up and down, and we've got ranges in which we function, where we function with a little too high, a good range, too low. But there is no real precision in human hormone levels. They're always changing. They change based on your diet. They change based on your exercise. They change based on your weight and percentage of body fat. They change on your emotional stresses. They change on, are you tired? How much sleep did you get?
Mm.
So there is no precise number in any human being, even in our robust youth. Okay, it's always changing. So you can't count for precision. And so this is what the pharmacology and the physiologist was telling us. He said, guys, relax. In medicine, we measure laboratories down, you know, to picograms and nanograms. And, you know, he said, it's like measuring a carpenter who wants to measure with a micrometer.
Mm-hmm.
And then he cuts the lumber with a chainsaw.
Wait a minute.
You know, that's really what we do with our medicine.
Okay. Oh, boy.
We measure where you are with great precision in the laboratory. But then we give you stuff, and your body is going to absorb more today than it did yesterday. You're going to put it on slightly different. Your gut is going to have more or less acid if it's a pill you're taking. Yeah. You know. So that kind of precision that we like to pretend we have in medicine doesn't really exist. So what we do is We either give you a syringe, and we can say, we tell the pharmacist, okay? And usually if it's a man, we'll say, all right, I want to have about 100 milligrams of testosterone per cc of this cream. And then you'll tell the guy, put on 0.5 cc each day, and you know, and put it on these particular areas of your skin. And then we give it a few weeks and let it average out and normalize, and then we measure and see where you are. And then we raise your dose or we lower your dose. But by changing either the concentration of the hormone in the cream, or changing the amount of cream that we put on your skin, or changing how much skin you put it on, or changing which skin you put it on, because some skin is very thin with a very rich blood supply, and some skin is very thick with a poor blood supply. By putting it on in the morning when you're, or right after your shower, when your skin is warm and moist and ready to absorb stuff, versus where it's cold and the blood supply is
all constricted in it.
Yes, and so you get lots and lots of different absorptions, okay? So we're dealing with averages. We're dealing with what is usually happening with this person. And there's a fair bit of guessing, by golly. I can give the same amount of cream at the same concentration to the to three different men, and they'll have three different blood levels.
Oh, okay.
It's just... So it's there is no magic numbers we can give. That, you know, people say, well, how much should I take?
Yeah.
Well, that's why we have a clinic and doctors who follow you closely.
That's
because
right.
There is no magic number I can give you. Does that help, or does that just confuse you?
Well, no, it all makes sense because we are individuals, and like you say, the absorption. Okay, well... I know you prefer the cream versus the injections.
Yes, I do. But again, we have a few people that we have on injections.
Huh?
And we've got a few people we're probably going to be starting on pellets pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not real fond of the pellets or the injections. I like the cream best because it gives me the most adjustability. I can raise and lower the doses quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The injections, we tend to kick your levels higher than we really want them, and then over time they come down, and then when they get too low, we kick them too high again. So you seem to get this sinusoidal high, medium, low, high, medium, low pattern. And with the pellets, we put it under your skin, and you know, you've got what you've got for the next 2 or 3 months, and there's not a damn thing we can do about it. And so it makes it really hard to adjust it, but some people only want to get that little pellet put in every few months and leave it alone. Both the injections and the pellets cause more testicular atrophy. Your testicles will shrivel up and get much smaller with either of those methods.
Mm-hmm.
The creams, you can put it on in the morning. You wash it off in the evening. If you're finding that your testicles are starting to shrink, you can just wash it off earlier each day. And, give your body more time to work and make its own.
Yeah.
So I like the cream because I have more flexibility, but there's all kinds of ways I can administer it depending on the situation of the person.
So what's the reason for the testicular shrinkage?
Well, there's an old adage in life, if you use it or lose it.
Yep.
When you give your body more testosterone than it is producing, it produces less. And if your testicles don't work, they get smaller. Let me tell you kind of a sad, funny story. Okay? Many years ago when I started this practice, probably, 20-some years ago, I had a guy and I told him, I said, you wash this off every night because if you don't wash it off, your testicles will shrink up. You know, I don't want your levels to stay high all the time. You put it on in the morning, you wash it off at night, then your body makes as much as it can through the night. It won't make as much as it used to, but it'll work and your testicles will do their thing. But, you know, old men's testicles tend to be smaller and softer than young men's testicles just because they're working less. He ignored me. And he put it on all the time. Never washed it off, except I guess when he took his occasional shower or bath. And I don't know how often.
Yeah. Oh boy,
dear. He's one of these people that's, you know, he's a twice a week bather or something.
Oh my god. Whether he needs it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was single, and he went to Hawaii with a new girlfriend, and apparently they were trying to make love on the beach, and she was apparently exploring his body. And she suddenly reached up to him and said, "You don't have any balls." And he said, "Doc, I reached down. I don't have any balls. What am I going to do?"
Well, whoa.
I had him come home. I examined him. He had them, but they were about the size of peanuts.
Oh, boy.
You know, little tiny almonds, not walnuts, little almonds. And put him on human chorionic gonadotropin injections about three times a week. And over a period of about 4 or 5 months, we grew his testicles back to normal size again. So, you know, we can fix it if it happens.
No guarantee of that.
Wow.
But he was really unhappy. You know, most men, you know, urologists give men testosterone shots all the time. And they just accept that your testicles are going to shrink up. Because they're giving it to men that are past childbearing age, and they say, if you don't want babies, it doesn't matter.
Okay? Correct.
And physiologically, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Physiologically, from a medical standpoint, they're right, it doesn't matter. But most men were born with a pair, and they want to die with a pair. And it's just all there is to it. And so most men have a real emotional connection to this part of their body. So.
No. All right. Wow. That
okay,
is kind
thank
of
you
a
very much.
All right. Take care. Wow. Bye-bye.
Okay. Just in time for a break. Why don't we take one? We're going to come back and talk with Katie. We have Vladimir and Mike on the line, and we will talk with you in just a moment as well. 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Leading Edge Medicine and Dr. Jerry Mixon in the house. Dr. Samira, you met. We're all here with lots of phone calls. So we need to dive right in to Katie. Katie is on the call.
I'll try to make my answers a little short.
Okay, from Des Moines.
Fewer stories.
Yes. That's right. Fewer funny but sad stories. Yeah. Hi, Katie. Welcome.
Hello, Katie.
Well, hi. You know, listening to the testosterone, I had a couple questions. Because you hear so much about, like, chalks, things that enhance bodies to build, to make testosterone.
Yeah.
Supplements. Does any of that work if you're, like, over 65, past menopause?
Not much. There are several supplements that do actually increase testosterone production a bit. You know, Terastallis and so on.
And DHEA, too.
Yeah, but they, on average, increase it, you know, 12 to 20% sort of range.
Small amount, yeah.
Yeah. So if you're a guy, you know, and your range is currently 50 and we want it to be 180 and you rage at 20%, you know, you've gone from 50 to 60. You haven't done much. So, yes, it went up, but it's not physiologically important. And if you're a woman, you know, if you're a 60-year-old woman and you're running a free testosterone of 2 or 3 and we can raise it to 4 instead of, you know, 8, 10, or 12, we're not getting much results. So it's a matter of degree. So, yes, they raise it. No, it's not physiologically effective.
Okay. And then, you know how males, you said they have kind of a cycle where you put on the testosterone in the morning because that's the natural rhythm. It crests, rises, and falls. Do women have a similar cycle?
Yes. Yeah, they do. Yeah, sure. You know, what most people don't understand is that women actually, even in 18, 20 years old, you guys had 2 to 3 times more testosterone in your system than you had estrogen. testosterone is the primary human sex hormone for men and women. Okay. You peaked your levels about 17 or 18 years old, which is why you were horniest when you were 17 or 18 years old. And so women cycle and their testosterone peaks at the same time as they ovulate. And the purpose, of course, is that to encourage you to have sex when you can get pregnant. The purpose of sex from a biological standpoint is pregnancy. Okay,
it's propagation of the species.
Yes, to have babies. And so women cycle monthly. Okay, men cycle twice a day. Women cycle once a month. It's kind of a big difference. But you raise your testosterone at its peak mid-cycle with ovulation because nature wants you to have sex when you are most likely to get pregnant.
Right. But also, you know, with the cortisol production first thing in the morning, both men and women have a surge of hormones.
Oh,
it's
yes.
just that it's much smaller in women with testosterone specifically than in men.
Yeah. You know, men can tend to refer to women as being hormonal, you know, when they have their mood shift.
Mm-hmm.
And because they do get, you know, when their estrogen, progesterone, estrogen and testosterone are peaked mid-cycle, then they are the most receptive to the man in their life. And then their progesterone raises about a week later so that just in case they got pregnant, it can support their pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the progesterone plummets to the floor. And that's the PMSing. That's when the mood swings and changes. And so, and then that sudden drop in progesterone not only changes your mood, it then causes the lining of the uterus to slough off, and that's your menstrual period. That's where you're cleaning out the uterus, getting ready for a new cycle so that maybe you can get pregnant next month instead of this month. So you guys have a nice monthly cycle. But when you look at total hormone levels, men's total hormone in our bloodstream is about 12 times higher than women.
Mm-hmm.
We are the hormonal ones. We are the ones that are driven by our hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? For every nanogram of total sex hormone you guys make, we make 10 and 12 times as much. Mm-hmm. So.
Wow. Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It explains a lot about male behavior, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not hormonal. You're hormonal.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I called in to talk about urinary stress incontinence. I'm just having a heck of a time. I've tried a couple pessaries. You know, I said I'm 65. And I was wondering, and, you know, there's this thing called double voiding.
Mm-hmm.
So when I pee, I think I'm done. But if I stand up,
it was again.
My pants.
Yeah.
So I learned that you just grab a piece of tissue, hold it there, and you're going to pee again, kind of push, and a lot more pee comes out. Is that what is that?
That's because God is male. Female plumbing is proof that God is a male. No female deity would design this system. It's just poor engineering. What you've got is the uterus, which is designed, of course, it starts off little tiny thing. I mean, it's, you know, golly gee, I'm sitting here looking at a fig Newton that, Samara is munching on, and that your uterus started off about when you were a young woman.
Oh,
and before
changes
you got pregnant.
Fig Newtons for me forever, Jerry.
Well, I was looking for an example. That fig Newton is about the size of a uterus. Okay.
Oh, my God. And it's not the whole packet or the whole bar. It's one little piece of it, okay?
Yeah. That fig Newton is about the size of your non-pregnant uterus as a young woman.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Okay.
Now, and that little fig Newton, baby implanted in it, and it grew big enough to hold an 8 or 9 pound kid.
I think every time a woman listens to this,
we're all going to think of fig Newton.
So this is that, you know, fig Newton to 9 pound baby. And with a bunch of fluid around it. And the bladder is attached to the front of the uterus, the bottom front part of the uterus. And so as that uterus is growing, the bladder is being pulled way up out of position and stretched and strained and torn. Okay. And then you have to go into delivery. And you're going to push this 8 pound baby through a 3-ounce opening. Okay, because the vagina is not designed for 8 pounds, for God's sake. The thing's got to stretch enormously. And so you're putting this great big thing through the small, small passageway, and the muscles get ripped and torn, and they don't heal properly, okay? So this whole thing of putting an 8-pound baby through a 3-ounce opening is just bad engineering. That's all there is to it. And so...
Okay.
Women's plumbing works great until they use it.
And then it
goes to hell. And men's plumbing only works good as long as we use it. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, fascinating number, okay? A man who ejaculates, who has sex 5 times a week, has half as much prostate cancer as a man who's basically abstinent. Okay? All right, come on. We only work well when we use it. So.
Wow.
So what's happened is now everything shrinks back down, but it's been ripped, it's been torn, it's been distorted, and it never goes back to its youthful size, shape, and function. And if a woman has had several children, she's gone through this process several times, and every time she's traumatizing the hell out of her urogenital tract. And so the sphincters and the valves that hold everything in, they're not working very well anymore. Things start wanting to fall down and drift out. And, you know, liquid leaks out through a pretty small hole. And so it doesn't take much. So, so really, you've tried pessaries, you've tried, you know, there are some things we can do. I'm sure you've probably tried the Kegels exercises and so on.
Vitalia. It depends on how bad she is.
Yeah.
But Vitalia might be.
Yeah. But Ronstadt, she's probably already tried the exercises to try to rebuild the muscles as much as you can. And for women that have not had too much damage, the exercises will help. But then we've got a device where we can tighten things up a bit. And it, the Vitalia, it's called, often will help.
Radio frequency treatment.
And in some cases, you're just stuck with either leaking or surgery.
Yeah, but you know, before you get to that stage, if women are starting to experience stress incontinence, then that's the time to start thinking about hormone replacement therapy.
Yes.
Because that really does help. It improves the moisture, it improves the lining of the endothelium.
Well, and it improves the muscle.
And the muscle. And therefore, it can delay the worsening of symptoms. And sometimes they don't need to do anything else about it.
Because the valves that hold that urine in your bladder are muscular structures.
Yeah.
And every muscle in your body gets weak as your female testosterone levels drop.
Yeah.
Okay. So your diaphragm is weaker, your arms and legs are weaker, you can't run as fast, you can't lift as much. Well, you can't hold your urine as well either, because those muscles are also weaker because of your hormonal changes.
And so, you know, if you're experiencing such significant stress incontinence, then I think consider a surgical consultation, go for a urogenital evaluation. And what they do is they'll look to see how your muscle, the detrusor muscle, is contracting with the sphincter and whether it's synchronous or not, how much of a prolapse do you have, and then they'll help you with whatever they find. For somebody listening in who has not advanced to that stage, and whether it's just this occasional little dribble when you jump or laugh or dancing or something, that's the time to really catch it.
Hormone therapy at that stage will often fix it.
Yeah. It'll delay the problems. If somebody's just had a child and they're starting to experience this, this is the time to come in. And you may not need hormonal therapy, but a little Vitalia treatment will really help tighten the vaginal walls, and it'll help with the stress incontinence. And you'll recover. Your hormone levels will bounce back and you'll recover. But it's a non-surgical treatment with no downtime. And if you are into perimenopause and menopausal age group, then seriously consider hormone replacement therapy, because it can really change the future for you.
Well, and this lady is 60, so.
Well, she's 65, but she's gone past
65.
That.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
yeah. So yes. She's, you know.
Anyway.
Okay. Well,
that provides some help.
That explains a lot, because I've been just wondering what is going on. But when you said it was attached to the uterus, the front bottom, and then pulled up when you get pregnant and stuff. So that helps a lot. I thought maybe I had a kidney stone that was blocking. Mm,
not
anyway,
likely.
So, No. Oh, wait, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call,
good luck,
Katie.
To you. Yeah,
bye-bye.
Katie.
Yes, this is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll take a quick break, and we're back with Vladimir, Mike, and Mary, and their questions. Stay right there, and if you have a question for the doctors, here is that number, 1-800-465-8770. We'll be back. Through the grapevine.
The grapevine. I just envision all those dancing grapes right
That's
about
right.
Now.
Yes. Thank you, Marvin Gaye, on that one. You're tuned in to Leading Edge Medicine. We're taking your calls, talking with you about your concerns in your health. We have Vladimir on the line. Welcome, Vladimir. Thank you for holding.
Hello, hello. My question is, I am 65 years old. Stem cells therapy is working for the old people, or I read somewhere that it's only working for people age 50 and less than that.
No, no.
Hang on. First, redefine old people, he said. Yes. 65.
65 is not old.
Okay.
I'm 76. You're younger than me. You're a kid. That's just all there is to it. Yeah. No, I had stem cell therapy on my left hip when I was, 72, 73, something like that.
At least 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And it did a wonderful job. I was glacier skiing 20 some years ago, and I made
foolish.
It wasn't the skiing that was foolish, but I took the helicopter up and I'm at the top and I'm skiing down like a bat out of hell, and I made the cardinal mistake of looking up the mountain to see if anybody was catching me.
Yeah.
And thou shalt not ski down the mountain while looking up the mountain.
Yeah. Mm. And I mean, for people who enjoy this kind of sports, I'm sure it's exhilarating, and also the views are just phenomenal.
Yes, I love it. But I hit that ice probably doing 50 miles an hour.
Ouch.
And I broke the ball right off of my femur, that big bone that goes up into my hip.
Yeah.
I broke the ball right off it.
Oh.
And that's called a subcapital fracture. And the problem with that particular fracture is that when you displace that ball, you interrupt the blood supply.
Right.
And part of that nice, smooth, round ball that fits in the socket dies and gets irregularly shaped. So they screwed it back together for me, and it healed very nicely, but I did have part of that die. And so I had an irregularity, and over the years that irregular instead of a nice smooth shape rubbed and rubbed and rubbed and developed some significant arthritis, and I was having a fair bit of pain. And so I went to see Dan Nelson. And Dan took some stem cells out of my bone marrow and injected them with PRP into my hip. And over the period of about 3 to 6 months, it got about 80% better. Mm. Didn't get completely well, but it improved about 80% with that first injection. But I use my body heavily. Mm. Okay, I like to run and jump and leap and cavort and dance into the night. And so I went back a second time about 6 months later, and he did it a second time, and I've had complete resolution. No pain. I run, I jump, I do anything I want to do, and it has just worked wonderfully. Now, it took two injections instead of one.
Yeah.
And part of that was probably because, I had damaged the bone pretty badly, and part of it was just I'm old. But
the other thing, too, that Dr. Nelson mentioned recently, Dr. Mixon, is that he finds that patients that are on testosterone replacement therapy, especially our longevity patients, have a much better outcome than those that are not on physiological doses of replacement.
Well, and I know why. And that's because anabolic steroids, both dehydroepiandrosterone and testosterone, are stem cell stimulators, especially in the bone marrow. they actually rescue your elderly stem cells, and they increase the number, and they give you stronger, more vital stem cells in your bone marrow. So when Dan is taking it out of your bone marrow to put it in your joint, you have better bone marrow. So yeah, one of the things Dan is saying that when dealing with older patients like us, you do a lot better if you have been on anabolic steroids for 6 months or so, and then go get your stem cells.
That is helpful.
All right.
And they will take stem cells from my hip.
Yeah.
And put in my knee.
Yes, they can. There's two sources of stem cells that are often used: either your bone marrow and your fat, your abdominal fat. It's really kind of interesting and sad. The only place in our body that we get more stem cells as we get older,
fat tissue,
is fat tissue.
Yay, wow. I'm willing to donate.
Yeah. You know, our brain makes fewer stem cells. Our skin makes fewer stem cells. Our bones, our heart, our lungs, our kidneys, every part in our body, we are getting fewer and fewer good stem cells as we get older.
Right.
Except fat.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Isn't that?
So, yeah. Why on earth God decided that? I don't know.
You know, the funny story is that professional athletes, if they are injured and they need their PRP from their fat cells, they have no fat
they
cells.
They don't have any.
Yes, that is true. Oh, well, that was my problem. I recently had an injury, and I went to the hospital, and the doctor was examining me and said, "You don't have any body fat, do you?"
Yeah.
"I prefer muscle, ma'am." So, you know,
boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, so we got two sources. We can do bone marrow and we can do body fat. And the body fat naturally increases the number of stem cells. The problem is that the stem cells in abdominal fat are mixed in with a lot of adipose tissue and other stuff, and they have to be separated out with more steps. The bone marrow is much easier to get them out of.
Mm.
But the bone marrow, you get a better result if you've been on anabolic steroids for a while. The fat cells, you get good stem cells even without the anabolic steroids,
yeah,
but the processing is more complex.
Right.
So they've both got advantages and disadvantages.
And then also, it's not just your age, it's also what level of injury you have, which joint have you injured, shoulders are getting good response,
yeah,
hips don't get such a good response, knees get a good result. So, you know, there's lots of things to take into consideration, and the injector will tell you more about that.
Yeah, yeah. But I've had, Dan has done both my right shoulder and my left hip.
Mm-hmm.
A few years back, I was, again, stupid. I do a lot of stupid stuff in my life.
You said it. We didn't.
No,
okay.
Listen, I am living proof that smart people do stupid stuff.
Yeah.
It's just all there is to it. I was walking across a parking garage, rebooting my cell phone and trying to type in the code while I walked.
Uh-oh.
And so I wasn't looking where I was going, and
oh,
I was looking at the phone, and I tripped over a curb and fell head first and landed right on my shoulder.
Ouch.
And tore three ligaments in my shoulder. Fortunately, they were partial tears. They weren't all the way through. But Dan let it rest a few weeks, got rid of some of the inflammation, put the stem cells in, and it is absolutely perfect. Well, now I can lift, you know, I can bench press 200 pounds with that shoulder, and I have no pain at all.
Mm.
So, you know, stem cells can, even in us older people, can do really, really good stuff if it's done by someone who knows what the hell they're doing, and if you're taking the anabolic steroids like I am. Does that help?
Yes. Can you give me his phone number one more time? Thank you. You helped me a lot.
Yes. Yes. I've got Dr. Dan Nelson, his contact information at Pro Ortho. His number is 425-823-4000. And I'll give that to you one more time. 425-823-4000 for Dr. Dan Nelson at Pro Ortho. To find out more, you can also go to his website, which is DanielNelsonMD.com.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vladimir.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to head to Kent now. We have Mike on the line for us. Good morning, Mike.
Hello, Mike.
Good morning.
How can we help you, sir?
Hello? Well, you were talking about testosterone earlier, and I believe I heard you mentioned 150 nanograms per deciliter was kind of an optimal range that you were shooting for. And
it's a starting
point. I pulled up my medical records at, can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. I pulled up my medical records and noted that my testosterone is 783 nanograms per deciliter.
That's your total,
so
not your
no
free.
No meds.
No. It's a different value. Yeah.
There's a total testosterone, and then there's the free testosterone.
Yeah.
And usually, in most men, 1-2% of your total testosterone is in the free form. So let's say you were running, 750, that would give you generally a 75 to 150 sort of range for a free testosterone.
Okay. That explains everything. I'm like, what's wrong with me?
Nothing's wrong with you. Testosterone is bound to sex hormone binding globulins and to albumin. And when the portion of it that's bound to the sex hormone binding globulins is irreversibly bound, it cannot get free to do its anabolic work. It whizzes around in your bloodstream, but it doesn't do much. And then part of it is attached to albumin, which is reversibly, it can get pulled off or it can stay on. It goes back and forth. And then there is the free form, that 1-2% that is not bound to anything. And that's the form that's free to get into your cells and do the business. Okay?
And most labs will not tell you the free form or
Unless you ask.
You have to ask for it because they have to calculate it.
Yeah.
And so they have to know the protein values, sex hormone binding globulin and albumin, to be able to tell you how much free you have. So if they don't plan to measure it, you won't know.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for the call, Mike.
My results don't actually make the distinction.
No, they don't.
All right.
Bye-bye, sir.
You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics, and we would love to have you as our next patient. We have three clinics for you, Tacoma, Linwood, and our beautiful new facility here in Kirkland. Now, if you've been hearing us talk about this for the last few years, and you've been thinking, yeah, I got to do that someday, well, don't put it off any longer. Give us that call. Come on in for that free health analysis appointment. It's just a blood test and an in-body test and a way for you to see our clinic and meet our doctors. And then find out, too, if you're at risk for things down the road, things like Alzheimer's, how about heart disease, diabetes, sexual dysfunction, and so much more. Get in, become a patient of Longevity, and you will be in stronger.
Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and a whole lot happier.
Happier, yes. Absolutely, but you got to take that first step, like so many have done. Here's that number. It's 866-86-YOUNG. 866-86-YOUNG. Tell them you want that free health analysis appointment, or you can go to our website, too, lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. We'll take a quick break, and we're back with Mary and Barbara's questions in just a moment. Stay right there.
Living on love, buying on time, without somebody, nothing ain't worth a dime. Just like an old-fashioned storybook rhyme, living on love.
So glad you tuned in this morning. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Samiri Umat here and Dr. Jerry Mixon. We're taking your calls at 1-800-465-8770. Headed to Buckley, we have Mary on the line with her question. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, my question is, have you heard of ivermectin as like a cancer treatment or an alternative?
Yes.
Treatment?
No. Yeah, there is. not as a straight or primary treatment, but correct. There is some papers from the National Cancer Institute that use ivermectin as a secondary therapy mixed with other drugs. So, yeah, there's a paper in Science Direct that came out, a year or so ago, and then there's a paper in Nature talking about ivermectin that actually increases the blood supply and carries more of the chemotherapy to the tumors and so on. But it's not being used as a treatment just ivermectin for the cancer. It's being used as an adjunctive therapy.
So my question is it for every cancer or is it for something specific?
There are specific tumors. Mm. And again, this is not literature I follow closely.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's neuroendocrine tumor that he has in his liver, but it has traveled other places, and he's not doing chemotherapy. It's kind of a new therapy. Through an IV with radiation and other medication with that.
Yeah,
but he's not doing chemo.
Yeah. Well, you have to realize our specialty is the aging process. I'm not an oncologist. You know, I come across these papers. I recognize they exist. If I understand properly, it's being used to slow the growth of some tumors. It's being used to increase blood supply and carry more of the chemo to the tumors. But I don't know specifically which tumors, what types of tumors. I have no idea the doses used. It's just not my field.
I can look up on those two websites that you just mentioned.
Yeah, if you go into PubMed, PubMed.com.
Okay.
Or .org, actually, or is it .gov? Anyway, look at PubMed and type in ivermectin cancer therapies. It'll pull up every paper published anywhere on planet Earth in the last 20 years on the subject.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, ma'am.
Bye-bye. All right. Thank you so much, Mary. And that is PubMed.gov.
Yeah. That's where I live my life, is in PubMed.
Yes, you do.
I spend my life reading journal articles.
All right. Another caller. Let's go to Olala. We have Barbara on the line. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I've got an issue with uncontrollable high blood pressure. It's been going on for a year. Mm. I had a stress test. I've had an echocardiogram, and I've tried multiple drugs that have bad side effects. The one that worked the most in controlling it and lasting control was nifedipine, but it made me extremely dizzy, made me extremely tired, and gave me edema. So now I'm on 50 milligrams metoprolol, 50 milligrams losartan, morning and night. Mm-hmm. And then along with that, I take 10 milligram of clonidine. No, it's, excuse me, it's 0.1 milligram.
Okay. It's not, I say 10 milligrams, I was going to faint.
It's strange. Where the others are 50 milligram, this is a 0.1 milligram.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I can take it, and it, too, makes me dizzy, extremely tired. It brings my blood pressure way down, but I feel like I can't function, and it doesn't last. So I have to take, like, three of those a day.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about hypertension, okay? High blood pressure, that we refer to as hypertension, is an interesting situation. It almost never goes up quickly. In our youth, you may run a little high, and then over time it gets higher and higher and higher, and your body adjusts to the high pressures.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we lower your pressure too fast or too far, all of a sudden you feel awful. Okay. And so the trick is you have to lower it gently, gradually, over time. When I hear somebody like you saying, you know, all these drugs lower their pressure and all these drugs make them feel awful.
Yeah.
It's because your body has accommodated to that high pressure.
Yeah. Right.
And it wants that high pressure right now because it's had it for a long time. And so you need to continue to work with your doctor and let them touch it gently, a little here, then a little more. And, you know, when I've had patients back in my country doctor days that had symptoms like you, I would accept the pressure to be higher than I really want it to be for a while.
Yeah.
And I'd start them on one drug, and I'd raise the dose slowly and gently over several months, not over days or weeks. And then if I had to, I'd add a second drug, and I'd take very low, low dose, and then I'd add a little more. And you ease that pressure down gently so your body adjusts to it as it's coming down.
Right.
And then the side effects don't seem to bother you nearly as much.
Right. So what I'm hearing you say is don't panic when you see a high reading. You want to make sure that you do the natural things, deep breathing, relaxation, diet, exercise, so on and so forth, and then use the medications one at a time ever so slowly.
Yeah. And then their diet and weight make a big, big difference. How tall are you and what do you weigh?
Well, I'm 5'4", and I'm 148, so I am a little heavy.
A little heavy, but not bad. Mm-hmm. You know, okay. I mean, I'd love it if you were 105.
But, oh, yeah. Well, that was when I was 12.
I know. I judge everybody by my wife, who is...
Don't listen to Dr. Mixon.
She is 5'4", and she's 105 pounds.
Oh, my word. Well, that's her genetics.
Yeah. Well, she is lean and tough, and she exercises. She runs like the wind. She jumps rope for an hour at a time. She does yoga and twists into positions that I couldn't get in when I was 2.
Wow.
Oh, bless her heart. Okay.
She's 48 years old, and she can do what I couldn't do it to. So, no.
I'm 70. So it seems, you know, at 69 and 70 was when I started falling apart everywhere.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it tends to happen. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
now I did get all your blood tests. I did do the Cambridge Heart, and I did do the standard $600 one.
Okay.
And Prochaska didn't find anything really major to be concerned about. There's just some little things to tweak, but nothing major showed up.
Well, that's interesting and unusual at that age.
Yeah, I can't find a cardiologist. It's been my primary care who's had all the testing and changing the drugs as I need something because of side effects. Mm-hmm. I cannot find a decent cardiologist. The last one I went to last month said, oh, take more Losartan. I'm already taking 100 milligrams.
I'm already falling down. Why do I want more? Yeah.
Yes, Dr. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Have you tried the DASH diet?
I've heard of it, but I haven't tried it.
Okay. Look it up on the internet. It is the only diet the National Institute of Health will actually send you copies of the DASH diet. DASH stands for Dietary Approach
to Stop Hypertension.
It is the only diet. It's not owned by anybody. I mean, a lot of people will sell you fancy kits and stuff. But the diet itself was developed as a research tool to lower blood pressure. And the majority of people who will go on the DASH diet and stay on it for 3 to 6 months find a significant drop in blood pressure.
Really?
Yeah, and also, you know, you mentioned your age and you mentioned the fact that you had done your labs with us. But I do find that nutrients that we use for our patients for different reasons, nitric oxide, we check for your nitric oxide level. And if you're depleted, that'll also help with vasodilatation. We use PDE5 inhibitors that help with vasodilatation. We use hormones like estrogen, which will also progesterone, which is a calming hormone, which will help with sleep. So we do use a lot of treatments as part of what we do normally that do help in preventing this from getting worse. Now, obviously, I have patients that have hypertension that are on medications, but there are things that can be done at the functional level, at the foundation, at the root cause of what is your hypertension coming from, that can benefit you and maybe help reduce what you're experiencing today.
Part of that is we
have a very stressful life. I did have that kidney test for the aldosterone.
Aldosterone. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. I had that too, and that was normal.
Okay. Good to know.
Now, the PDE5 inhibitor, my husband's with you guys, and he's on that too. He has AFib. So that's good for anybody then.
I love having women on PDE5 inhibitors. They dilate your blood vessels, which lowers your pressure. They improve the blood flow to your brain. They improve the blood flow to your muscles. They tend to lower your blood pressure gently. And they actually slow the growth of a large number of cancers. They're actually promoted for erectile dysfunction in men. But they've got so many uses in men and women that I just don't understand why more doctors don't use it for women, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
my wife is on it.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, and all the cardiologists that my husband sees, none of them know anything about it or would recommend it. He gets it from your doctors.
Yeah, well. You know, one of the nice things we can do is when you've got a cardiologist that doesn't understand it, is if your husband asks, we can give him the peer-reviewed research papers that he can take to his cardiologist if you want to.
He gets a prescription from your doctor that he sees, so it works great for him.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
very good.
Thank you for the call, ma'am.
Easy, quick answer, but thank you very much.
You're welcome, dear.
But look
up the DASH diet and see if it gives you any help, okay?
Sounds good. Okay.
Right. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you for being on the radio and helping all of us out here.
You're welcome, ma'am.
All right. Okay. Wow. Very good show with lots of different topics today. Woof, and lots of discussion. We enjoy that, and we enjoy you. Thank you for listening to Leading Edge Medicine, being brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. We will be back in the studio again next week, live with Dr. Samiri Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. I'm Lynette on behalf of the doctors and Leading Edge Medicine. Have a great rest of your weekend, and thank you for listening. We'll be back next time.